Hope Bridge is on a gospel-led mission to transform the foster care landscape in Ohio. We're here to raise awareness and empower churches and communities to step into action by supporting vulnerable children and families in their local communities. In this podcast, we'll be shining a light on stories of hope, redemption, and transformation, and sharing practical ways that you can step in and get involved. Welcome to Restoried, a podcast by Hope Bridge. We're going to go ahead and get started. Thanks for checking out this breakout session. As a team, when we started thinking through, you know, what the topics were going to be that we were going to present during each of our breakout sessions, we wanted them to be things that were interesting, that people would want to hear about, but also challenging and would encourage people to stretch a little bit and get outside of their comfort zone. And something that we kept coming back to was the topic of the impact of foster care on our biological children and our extended family. I'm a licensed social worker, and I've seen this show up in my own work many, many times, that families are fearful of what will happen to their kids or their family, so they either decide not to make the choice to enter into foster care, or they decide to kind of restrict the kids that they're going to welcome into their home. And so we really wanted to have a breakout session that would look at, you know, just the impact of dragging versus leading. And I'm so excited to introduce you to our panel, who each have a really unique perspective on this topic. So I am joined by Lisa Robertson, Rhonda Wagner, and Bethany Adkins. So I'm just going to ask each of you ladies to start with a little introduction and explain to us how your life has been impacted by foster care.
So all the foster parents in the room, you know, when you introduce yourself to another foster family, you give your foster care stats. And so that's kind of, there's a lot more to who I am. I'm with Hope Bridge too, but in terms of foster care, I'm on the panel as a foster and adoptive parent. My husband and I were licensed through Stark County for 8 years. We have one biological daughter who is 12, and then three adopted sons, 7, 5, and 3. And we closed our home in October after our third son's adoption.
I am here. I'm Lisa's mom, and my name is Rhonda. I'm from Newcastle, Pennsylvania, which is an hour and a half east of here. My husband's in the audience, Dan, and we met and married many, many, many years ago. And we have two daughters, Lisa and an older daughter, Dana. They're both Ohioans now. We also have five grandchildren. And I have become a grandma more often in a courtroom than I have in a hospital waiting room. And it's all been good.
I'm Bethany. My husband and I have three biological kids of our own, and we have been licensed foster parents for 18 months. During that time, we have had 6 placements, 5 of them being siblings, and that case taking pretty much the entirety of our journey. But the reason I'm on the panel today is I was actually a foster sibling from about 2000 to 2006.
We'll start with Lisa. I want you to take us back to when you decided to share with your extended family and your mom, Rhonda, who's here. You shared with them that you and your husband were going to pursue foster care. So how did that go over?
So our story is a little bit unique in that my husband and I had a scare, putting it lightly. After our daughter was born, I contracted a deadly bacteria and almost died after that. And so foster care was never a part of our hopes and wishes and dreams as a family. It's definitely something that through that experience, we felt like God called us to it. And so we had lived a lot of hard before we stepped into foster care. And so for the two of us, it was something that we felt like God just kind of blindsided us with and hit us over the heads with. And we were at a point in our marriage and spiritually that we just wanted to obey what God was asking us to do. And so we kind of jumped in full force into the deep end and told our families that we were thinking about pursuing foster care. And then we just did it and drug them along for the ride initially.
Okay, Rhonda, now you tell us from your perspective, what do you remember about when Lisa said they were going to do foster care?
Okay, what I remember is shock, complete surprise, and I was just like, they've been through so much already. Can they really do something this hard next? Can my little granddaughter, Avery, who's not even four yet, can she do something this hard next? And how about me? Like, if I'm being truly honest, we were just getting over this very hard, traumatic experience of nearly losing our daughter after she gave birth to our first grandchild. We went from utopia, the top of the world, having our new granddaughter, to 1 week later, nearly losing our own daughter. And it was just hard. And I thought, dear Lord, can we even begin to do this? Weren't we still just trying to heal from all of that?
Bethany, what I love about your perspective is that not only do you have everything that you've been through currently as a foster family, but you have that experience as a foster sibling, and a foster sibling from 20 years ago, in a time when foster care and adoption were very, very different. So I would love for you to share with us just what that's been like for you to figure out about leading versus dragging with your own kids and how your experience has played into all of that.
Yeah. So, like I said, it was about 2000 to 2006. So I was 9 to 15 years old. So very impressionable age. But at the time, you know, I was really excited. It might surprise some of you in the audience that know me, but I was really compassionate and sweet and kind. And just the idea, I always loved the idea of missions trips. So like welcoming kids into our home I was all for it. And I would say all of our siblings were. And so we kind of had these rose colored glasses going into it. And I should also mention my parents were licensed through the Bear Foundation and took a lot of older kids. They didn't want to take young kiddos. So it was hard. We had really hard cases. And so it wasn't until we were in the thick of it that I felt the feelings that we all feel, you know, the ones that bring us shame sometimes as foster parents. You have, even as parents, but we have to remember that our kids feel it too. So for kids, a lot of it is, I don't want to share my room. I don't want to share my parents. I don't want to share my stuff. I don't want this kid here. And so I would say that experience, when I was older and married, I met my husband and I said, you know, I want kids. And by the way, I'm never going to do foster care. And here we are. It gave me empathy to sit with my kids and look in their eyes and remember what I felt when I was there and to be able to empathize, you know, and to say the words for them and let them know that shame is, it's there because this is not how God designed family to be, and that's okay though. So I guess that's what I would say.
So Rhonda, going back to when you shared with us about what you remember, there was definitely a lot of hesitation from you from that initial news that Lisa and her husband were going to get licensed. What words of advice do you have for people who are listening to this and they either are that family member that's struggling to be supportive or they have, you know, a family member that's struggling to be supportive? What advice can you give them?
So if you're out there and your children, your adult children have come to you and say, we want to go into foster care, the first thing I would want you to consider and say to them is, we are just so proud of you. Think about that for a minute. what your children are choosing to do. This is not an easy thing. They are choosing to give up their comfortable lives to comfort the life of a child that they don't even know yet. To me, that sounds like Jesus. And I would be so wary of saying anything that might deter them on that mission. Like, if you have any negative thoughts or fears, I would just keep those to yourself, and I would take them to your knees and pray about that. Because it's very admirable what they're doing. Let them know that you support them in all that they're doing, even if you don't know what that looks like yet. And then once they do start going to training classes, I would say that's the time to get your official background check done so that you can, at the very least, offer some babysitting services for them. That's where I'll stop.
I love what you shared, Rhonda, because I think it's just so normal and natural for our extended family members to sometimes feel hesitation when we come and say, hey, we've decided to basically throw a bomb into our entire life, and we want you to get on the crazy train with us. You know, that fear and that hesitation doesn't come from a place of like, we don't love you and support you. It's natural. It's healthy to have a fear of just the unknown. And it comes from a place of love. You know, you loved your daughter and your granddaughter, and we'll assume you also love JJ too. It came from a place of loving them well and not wanting them to go through something hard, but we know where our hope and our help comes from. And so we can't sit in that fear and stop there. We have to be able to move through it. So going back to Lisa, from your perspective here, what are you saying then to the foster families who were in your shoes?
So I shared that my husband and I just kind of jumped into the deep end full force and drug our families along with it. That's our personality for sure, is we face the hard things head on and just plow through. But knowing what I know now, the advice that I would give to families that are just stepping in, if your extended family, biological family, isn't super supportive. Yesterday at the pastor's workshop, Jason Johnson shared about how foster families end up with two groups of people. And there's the ones that love you and the ones that get you. And they don't have to be the same people. And the people that love you don't have to get you. And they may never get you. And so your family will always be in that group of the people that love you, but they may not initially get you. And so if that's where your family is, I would say work on building your group of the people that get you. And it's okay that your family is not in that group yet. Our experience was sort of that, where both sides of our families didn't initially get it, and it took time. I will say that my mom tried to get it as she...
still doesn't get it. She's still trying.
But she's a need meter, so she was trying to meet needs in our family with the things that she was doing. And I think you'll talk about this, but she wrote books that are out there that you could use as a resource. But my husband's parents, it took till we got our first placement, and then they got it. And it took seeing a child's face and putting a name to a face and a life to a story, and then they got it. And so I would just encourage you to keep going in the calling that God's placed on your life, and trust that your family is either going to stay in that people that love you group, or they'll eventually be in the people that love you group and the people that get you group.
That's great advice, for sure. Because I think it's easy to take it personally. I remember feeling that way when we got licensed, you know, that my parents said, well, why not, you know, there'll be other people to help those kids. Like, you have kids of your own. There'll be someone else for those kids. And they just didn't get it yet. But also, we all as foster parents spend months thinking, praying, discerning, you know, the decision to pursue this, and our families don't. And then when we go through the licensure process, we have to take training, we do paperwork. There's a significant investment on our part that's just not there for them. But I love, Lisa, what you were saying, that it's not that it's not there and it'll never be, it's just not there yet. And it might take some time for them to get on board. So we can't take it personal and just write them off and think, well, if they're not for me, they're against me. You know, they might just need to take some time. And in the waiting, you can build your own support network of people who get it for you. Okay, ladies, so our topic is dragging versus leading. We've covered the fact that our families and our kids, they don't really get a say on whether they're on the crazy train with us. We just kind of bring them along. So I want to hear from each of you what you think makes the difference between dragging your family through the mud and through foster care or into adoption, and what defines leading them into it and through it well.
Before I answer that, I want to go back just really quick talking about what you just said, and then earlier talking about sitting with your kids and walking them through this. Something I forgot to mention is I think it's so important for us as families to figure out our why. And for some of us, like for my husband and I, it was just, this is where God has us and this is what he's called us to. We've resisted it and we've resisted it long enough, and this is, we can't explain it, but this is what we have to do. But for some people, there's so many different reasons. But I think that you have to know your why, because you're going to continuously have to remind yourself of that and remind your kids of it, especially when it's hard. And I think sometimes we think, oh, it's just one sit down conversation that we have as a family meeting. Here's our why. This is where we're doing it. You cannot remind your kids of your why enough. So just being on that page, and when they're in the pits, reminding them of that and then pointing them to Jesus. So I wanted to just say that. But dragging versus leading, I have a cliche answer and then a more practical, I would say. So with the cliche, which sounds horrible because it's actually really good, is I feel like when I think about dragging versus leading, I lead best when I'm actually following. And what I mean by that is when I am following God, a God who never fails, who I know loves me, he loves my kids, he's unwavering, there's a confidence that I have that can only come from that. And so my kids are just a few steps behind me, thinking they're following me, but actually we're all just following God's plan for our family. And so thinking about dragging, it's the exact opposite. It's when I start to take my eyes off of Christ and follow my wants and my desires, which it's, we all know the verse in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. And so that's when we're trusting in God and his plan. And so when you start to follow your own path and your own plan, it's chaos. And our kids feel that chaos. And so when I start to feel that chaos of the dragging and trying to figure out why am I dragging, why is this hard, it's almost always that I've decided to take my eyes off of the cross. So that's what I would say. Oh, practical. Pray, read your Bible. Sounds so simple, but do it. And don't just do it. Let your kids see you do it. Because all day we can say, this is where God has us, but they need to see that we are truly doing those things. And then intentionality, sit down and talk to them, figure out where they're at, meet them there. And that's hard when we have a lot of kids in our home. So plug into community. That's the third one. Find people who will wrap around you and support you. And Hope Bridge has so many great resources that I think we're going to talk about. That is something my parents did not have. And they had 7 kids, and that was really hard. So hard for them, hard for the kids, but they still met us there. So that's what I would say.
I love that line, I lead best when I'm following. That's such a good one-liner. Stay tuned, because that'll probably be on a shirt next year.
Okay, I can share about where I was whenever we first learned of their venture into foster care and how much better my heart posture is now than I was then, and when they were effectively dragging us, and now we're not being drugged so vehemently anymore. We're kind of on board. And I can thank God for that, because initially all I was afraid of had to do with Lisa and JJ and Avery and us. And I wasn't thinking of the hard that these dear, innocent children were experiencing. I wasn't thinking about neglect, hunger, abuse. These words were outside my daily living. These words were outside my comfort zone. And once those words just penetrated my heart and my soul, I thought, these kids need Lisa and JJ to step in. And maybe they need some good grandparents along the way too. And it actually, when they started to tell us about foster care, it helped me come to realize that perhaps Lisa's infection, her near-death experience after having Avery, was that part of God's leading them to this point? I'm not sure they would have got there without it, even though that sounds like extreme to me. I'm not God, and I have to come to that point where I can say that, like, whatever you do, God, I am all for it, and I trust it, as hard as that is to wrap my mind around. I just don't know the whole rest of the story. I don't know the whole picture, so I leave it up to him. And even, I remember when they approached us, Lisa saying, "Mom, we're really not choosing foster care, but we are choosing to follow where God is leading us. We're acting in obedience." So once I put my mind around all that, it just started to make more sense to me. So we just had to jump on board.
I immediately thought that we all need lots of grace. And foster care is not a comfortable walk, no matter what your cases look like that are in your home. They're full of really hard things and hard stories. And a lot of times as a foster family caring for the children in your home, it's hard to even communicate those stories to family where your family can even fully understand how hard it is. And so I think that if we simplify it a little bit and just say, like, everybody needs some extra grace, that goes a really long way in foster care journeys, because all of us families in the thick of it, we're just really trying to survive. And so I think that we can overcomplicate it sometimes, and we are going to get to a few resources. I'll just lead into that, but I had mentioned that my mom wrote some books, which she did, because she was in that place of trying to meet a need for our daughter at the time, who was three, looking for books that she could read with her. They're readers together, and there were no books. And so she wrote them, and they're out there. You can pick them up today. They're up here on this slide too. But and then we've launched a podcast from Hope Bridge, and then Bethany and her husband, they have a podcast as well, and just to meet needs, really. And so we're going to play a clip from Bethany's son and daughter from a recent episode that they recorded, where they just had a really tough case come through their family and the kids reunified. And so they did kind of like a touch base with their kids. And I was so touched by it, listening to the episode and just listening to the simplicity of that childlike faith. And like I said, as adults, we can overcomplicate this, and we can think that there's, you know, these five steps to follow to make your family understand or to make your kids ready for foster care. And there's just not. But I just loved how they simplified it. And so you can see the slide there, 11 and 8. So we're going to listen to that clip.
Okay, why should somebody do foster care?
Because the kids need a home to live. The kids need a home and they deserve a home. It might change you a little bit. It's not going to change you that much. Like we said earlier, it's going to make you stronger. And these kids are in need of a home. Like they deserve a home. And I feel like by doing foster care, it makes your family stronger. And it gives you more experience with things that you aren't comfortable with doing.
If we could get into a time machine and go back 2 years ago, and you and we, mommy and daddy came to you, we haven't done foster care yet, and we come and ask you, what do you think about us doing foster care? Now that we have done it, would you say yes, we should do it, or would you say no?
And you can tell the truth.
Tell the truth.
Yes, I would say yes, definitely.
Really?
Yeah. I would say yes.
Why would you say yes?
If I could do like what the same kids, what we've already gone through, I would say yes. And even if we didn't go back in a time machine, like let's say we never did foster care and you guys just came up to us right now, I would still say yes. Because it feels right and it feels like the right thing to do.
As a mom, doesn't that just make you so proud of your kids?
Ayla, that was edited. I just want to say something really quick, though. Our experience has been really hard, but we have had so many people wrap around us. And the North Canton Chapel stepped up, and Hopebridge stepped up for our family. We just came out of a really hard case. I don't know that my kids' experience would have been that way had we not had the support. And I think sometimes as foster parents, we just pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and we don't need help, but we do. And by not accepting help, we are not only doing ourselves a disservice and leading to burnout, the county a disservice, our kids a disservice, marriages, but also the people who want to be part of foster care but cannot be foster parents. So that was, I had to humble myself a lot because for the first like 12 months, I was like, no, we don't need a meal. And my family's at home starving and I have 15 loads of laundry. But so care communities, I don't know. I know we're running out of time, but that was pivotal in our experience.
Yeah, Bethany's family had a care community. We saw the video earlier from the North Canton Chapel. And it was amazing to watch, but also as a former foster mom made me really jealous because someone would just show up at her house once a week and take her laundry and bring her a meal. I'm like, that's amazing. I wish I would have had that. But yeah, made such a difference in you and your husband's well-being, which trickled down to your kids and had to be part of the reason why they were able to so beautifully articulate that. And what a testament to your ability to use your personal experience to lead them through this versus dragging them. So we hope that this has given you some things to think about. Definitely scan the QR code up there. Check out Rhonda's books in the lobby. Connect with Hopebridge on all of our various platforms. And I think we're going to be starting worship music here in like 7 minutes. So if you need to use the restroom or get a drink, feel free to do that. Thanks for checking this out.